Yes, questions. Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to know if you've had experience with people who have had a qualitative experience without having it being connected with death particularly, like after an extreme event.
Yes.
And their qualitative experience was just so similar.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Thank you so much for that question. And I always neglect to mention that, but I should. And that is that many elements of these near-death experiences occur in other contexts than in close calls with death. For example, the out-of-body component. Out-of-body experiences occasionally occur to people who are not even near death. And two of my favorite contexts are, number one, musicians who are playing great music on stage will sometimes find themselves out of their body going into this light. And a wonderful concert pianist in France, Eric Pagani, told me in 1988 about an experience he had like this. He was playing a concert, and at the height of the music, got out of his body. When he came back to his body, the piece was over. And Eric is such a wonderfully sweet and modest man. And I said, well, did the audience seem to like it? And so Eric, who's very sweet and modest, he said, well, yes, they seem to. And fortunately, his girlfriend was there. And she had been at the concert. And she said, as a matter of fact, the audience was just jumping up and down and yelling and screaming and clapping. So Eric got interested in this. And he said, well, if it's happened to me, it's happened to others. So he asked around among his operatic singer friends and he wrote a whole book in France about this, about the spiritual experiences of musicians on stage. Another one, which is another of my favorites, is that astronomers looking through their telescopes will sometimes find themselves out of their body looking at themselves, looking into space. So yes, ma'am, absolutely. These spiritual experiences, they don't have to be connected with death. George Ritchie used to say, you ought to be glad that God didn't have to strike you dead to teach you these things. Yes, sir.
Dr. Moody, I understand that several people have profound emotional and life-changing shifts that occur after these experiences. But
yes.
I was wondering if you've noticed any kind of trends, and this doesn't have to be tabulated with any kind of math or anything, but very anecdotal on your part, if there are any mundane change that you see common in these people, like, say, dietary habits, eating or sleeping habits, romantic and sexual proclivities or anything like that, that seem to be associated with these?
Nothing of that description comes to mind, but since I've talked with so many thousands of people now, you know, it wouldn't necessarily pop into my mind. But I can't think of anything like that, except one thing you might be interested to know is that in quite a number of cases over the years, I have seen a recurrent pattern where a businessman or somebody in a high-charged profession where they're always busy and so on will have one of these experiences, and that it precipitates a divorce. And what happens is, contrary to your intuition, you know, the wife had all their marriage been saying, oh, I wish he would be more emotional and so on. But when it actually changes, there's a homeostasis change in the marriage, and the partner may find this very difficult to accept. So it does create ruffles in interpersonal relationships like that. Yes.
Yeah, I got three questions. First one is, I filmed my mom dying in the hospital, and there's a point where I watched the film again, and I made the comment during the film, the spirits are gathering.
Yeah.
Can you feel it? And every time I watch it, I get the same feeling. Now, with the technology of infrared and other cameras that we have, has anybody made a study where they're filming a deathbed at the point of the death?
Well, you know, it's interesting about that. I have thought about knowledge all my life, and one thing I realized very early in high school was the best way to conceal the limits of your knowledge is never to step outside of them. So I have made it a practice that, you see, for example, when I have to get the VCR turned on, I have to consult my 12-year-old son. So I am not the person to ask whether instrumentation of anything. I can't even drive a car. So I don't know. My impression would be that I think that in these things we are dealing with some other state of existence that is outside of the energetic and material domain that we live in, which would make me think maybe not, but at the same time, maybe so. I just don't have the knowledge to be able to guess.
There's a lot of anciently and modernly, there's the idea that actually these people are going back to a realm mm-hmm. that they came from.
Yes, yes.
And they talk about seeing spirits preparing to be born. Mm-hmm. And there's like Cupid that's pointing to the parents, baby angels around them saying,
yeah.
"There's shoot the lovers there, we parents mm-hmm. to be," which shows up in near-death experiences. Isn't that the case that you're finding out actually they're returning home?
That's what a lot of people say. They say, this is like going home. And I have abundant cases where people say that they saw spirits lining up to come into this realm. That little detail is in Plato, too, in the story of Ur. But more apropos, actually, is my own experience with my two adopted kids. My wife and I adopted two kids at birth. Carter is 12 now, and Carol Ann is 10. Carter, when he was 5, was sitting on the bed, and we were watching TV, and I was flipping through the channels, and he became very excited about this show. And I won't, this is a long story, but to get to the point, he started talking about that he had come here from this other place. And so I was just startled, because I should explain to you, my wife and I really don't talk about life after death. That's part of my profession. What we talk about is, how are we going to pay the phone bill? What movie to take the kids to? What are we going to have for dinner? And so our kids really don't get exposed to this, but Carter just got very animated, started talking about this, and he could tell that I was just astonished. I'm sure I'm looking like this, and he sort of waking up to the fact that it wasn't computing with me. He said, "Yeah, Dad." And he said, "Before I came," he said, "I was up and I saw you and Mom lying down in the grass." And he went on with this description. I knew exactly what he had was talking about. 5 years before Carter was born, my wife and I were in Greece, and we were very tired, and the attendant at this archaeological site invited us to lie down in the grass. It was exactly as Carter described, and what we were talking about was adopting a child.
That's interesting.
Now, my daughter Carol Ann, who's 10, is Blackfeet by heritage. About a year or so ago, we take these long walks, and it's about a mile from our house. There's this old wooden bridge, and she loves to sit on the bridge. And one day, she was just talking, and she said, "Yeah," she said, "you know, I was with God, and God pointed you out to me," she said. And she said, "You've got to go down and be his daughter." And again, I was just astonished. And so picking up on that, she continued, and she said, "Yeah." And I said, well, how did you feel about that? And she said, "Oh, I didn't want to go." And she said, "I wanted to stay with my Gotti," she said, exactly like that. But she said, just full gestures, and she said, "But God pushed me down to be with you." And I said, "Well, are you glad you came anyway?" And she said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah." And when you hear it from your kids, that's...
Yeah. Last question. Mm-hmm. A lot of, like, Howard Storm and George Ritchie and a number of people talk about seeing visions of the future.
Yes.
Not only what will happen in the Americas and in this country, but they talk about the ultimate potential of the human family. I mean, there's got to be a point to all this life and death. And so my question is, I know what Ritchie talks about in his second book, My Life After Death, about the ultimate potential of the human family, and Howard Storm talked about being co-creators with the gods in the universe, that kind of thing. So is that an area that you've had people comment about, the future of this country and the future?
Yes, yes, that's especially in people with extremely lengthy cardiac arrest, absolutely. I've heard this from back in the 70s. Every time I pick up a newspaper or turn on CNN these days, I think back to what these people used to tell me. I mean, I sure hope I'm wrong, but it looks like to me that we are in big trouble and that these things that I see unfolding in the news now are precisely things I heard from George Ritchie when I was an undergraduate and from other people as well. Who knows what to make of that? You know, I used to think back in the 70s that it was just common sense in a way, because if you sort of extrapolated forward from what was going on even then, you could see that eventually things were going to run aground. But they've ended up being so specific. So yes, absolutely. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, two years ago, I heard you speak when you were here, and one of the things you brought up was that you were doing a survey. I think 250 attorneys. Did you follow through on that?
I am continuing to do that. I've shifted the way I'm doing it a little bit. Yes, what I can confidently say now is that it's more than possible, it's an actuality, that by taking people through a logical process in which they rethink the sort of fundamentals of rational thinking and extend logic out a little bit, then you can open up a part of the mind that in the future, when people have a near-death experience, it will no longer be so difficult for them to express it, because it, as I said, it gives a new, it's like inventing a new language to talk about this, which helps overcome the ineffability problem. And that is a reality. It's just a matter of time before this kicks in and that we will realize that we have entirely new ways of investigating this. But what is even more exciting in a way, that in the process of doing that, we open up untapped potential of the human mind. And the reason why this is important is that these new ways of thinking, we can absolutely establish a transcendent link between this state of existence and these other states of existence. That much is a reality. Now, one thing is that this is not going to go down well with the people who are wedded to a certain way of looking at this. For example, the parapsychologists who have all these schemes to investigate near-death experiences this way or that way, because this is an entirely new model, but it's working out very beautifully.
Why did you pick attorneys?
Well, I'm not doing that anymore, but initially it's that what is needed for this are people who the characteristics, and incidentally, this is something I've been developing since I was a professor of logic back in the 60s. So it's a constant thing I've been evolving. But the characteristics that this is most effective with of people is there's four characteristics, and I've just learned from my students by trial and error, is that this requires people who are, number one, enjoy thinking for its own sake, who, number two, have a talent for reasoning and analysis. It needs to be analytical thinkers. Number three, that they are patient and persistent, which is operationally defined as just the ability to sit there for 2 days and to do exercises and to think through. It's almost like you're in a jury and you're following a case through. And fourth, if they have a good sense of humor. And given people with those four characteristics, you absolutely can open an unknown channel of the mind. Mm-hmm. It works.
I have one more, and I don't know whether you heard this or not, but I happened to be at home. I had the Today Show on, and Matt Lauer interviewed this lady. It was a group of friends. They were all meeting, and all of them but her decided to do an out-of-body experience.
Wow.
And you didn't hear?
I didn't hear.
I heard this. I was fascinated by it. And they all left. Mm-hmm. And one of her dearest friends came back into her body and told them that they were having so much fun and meeting friends and family and that they didn't want to come back to Earth. They were staying, but she felt that she needed to come back and explain why they were all staying.
You know, that 20 years ago would have seemed weird to me, but I got to say that, I think it's a lot easier than we imagine in this 21st century society that we live in. It's really a lot easier than we imagine to re-enter these spiritual states that have been a part of the collective cultural heritage of humankind going back thousands of years. Yes, ma'am.
Parts of this you've already addressed, especially with the question of the first woman here. But originally my question was, when you were talking about those with shared experiences, mm-hmm. that they more or less their spirit or whatever you call it left their body. Mm-hmm. My first thought was, what happens to the body that's left behind? Mm-hmm. If they're standing up, do they fall down? I mean, obviously,
yeah,
and then when you were talking about more psychic, transcendental, meditative kinds of things, which I've been aware of, most people that do that are either laying down or sitting down. Mm-hmm. And then you talked about the pianist, etc. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's the same kind of experience. And how are you talking about a mind trip or a spirit trip where the soul, the essence mm-hmm. of the body leaves, which would be what most religions would say mm-hmm. is what happens when you die mm-hmm. and it comes back, as opposed to the mind leaving mm-hmm. and leaving the body intact? Does that, I'm trying to figure out what's the difference and how do you explain that someone can apparently have these out-of-body experiences,
the body goes on functioning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even laying down and meditating, but functioning.
Well, you know, first of all, that goes far, far back. Around 600 BC, the first case I know of this is a man named Hermodimus, who had mastered the art of leaving his body. And he would, if you had a question about some distant place, he would get out of his body and go see it for you. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly the, you know, in terms of saying, well, this is the spirit or the soul or the mind, I have never really been able to master those distinctions very well. Where I think of it is consciousness, and the way I look at it is that our conscious self can apparently sort of get out of the physical body or whatever language you would use. I really don't have an answer to how that would relate to the physiological functioning, but I've had people say, when they leave their body doesn't collapse. It goes on functioning on automatic or whatever, whereas their consciousness is displaced to another state of existence, I guess.
Yeah, so you're not making a distinction between any of that, just the term conscious awareness.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I've read all the stuff about the different theories of the soul and the mind, and I think a lot of that is, it's hard to draw those distinctions, and different people draw them in different ways, so I don't know. Yes, sir.
Dr. Moody, my question is a tangent from the main topic of the experience itself.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to focus on, are there studies about people who have returned mm-hmm. and their lifestyle changes in behavior or attitudes? Are there any studies along that, how their lives have changed post near-death experience?
Well, yes, a lot of studies have been done on that sort of thing, and there's a wealth of literature. But the place I would sort of refer you to begin is there's a journal that's been published continuously, I think, at least maybe now for 30 years, and it's called the Journal of Near-Death Studies. And you can look through the index of that, and there's a vast number of studies that have been done. And about this IANS group, by the way, if I could talk about my hosts, this is an organization that goes way back. As a matter of fact, Martin may be interested to know that the way IANS got started was that it was entirely the work of one man, John Audette, who was a friend of mine, a medical sociologist. I knew him when I was in medical school, and he got interested in my work. And he went around and met all the different people who were investigating this, Ken Ring and Mike Sabom and so on. And We had a meeting in November of 1977 or 78 in Charlottesville, Virginia, and present were John Audette, Michael Sabom, Sarah Kreutziger, Beverly Belk, a physician, Bruce Grayson, me, and my wife. And that was the original foundation of IANS. And for some years thereafter, John Audette single-handedly kept this organization afloat. He was living in Peoria, Illinois, and he did all of the publications and so on. It's amazing to me that 1978 was, I don't know how long ago now, a long time, and it's still going. Yes, ma'am.
I have a friend who's had a near-death experience, and she tells about going back and seeing herself as a man in another life and being reincarnated. Mm-hmm. Is that a common thing?
Well, I don't know, because in the cases I have seen over the years, I have heard that in a few cases, and most remarkably to me, in a couple of cases of people who were literally Southern Baptists, who had no background that would make them think in terms of reincarnation, and both said that one man told me that just before his life review started, there was a thing that went by very fast as though there was something before. I've heard occasional people say, yes, that they remember during the near-death experience, they see these connections to past existences. The trouble is I don't have enough of them to make any sort of assessment, but it's certainly an interesting fact. And much more common, however, is people who have a near-death experience and say that they didn't see anything while they were in this other state that led them specifically to think that there is reincarnation, but at least that what they saw was so astonishing that it wouldn't be surprising to them.
First, I want to say that I have been a fan since Betty Eady, way back, and when this type of discussion was not really accepted as it is today, and I want to thank you.
Thank you.
For your mission.
Thank you, ma'am.
I think I know part of the answer to this question, but my little niece back here wants to know about pain and death.
Pain and death.
Because I feel like I've read stories where people are actually lifted from the pain and then are brought back.
And the pain is there again. Yeah, this is a very common thing I say. People have told me things like that maybe they've had a trauma or whatever, and that when they're in their body, there's this horrible pain. And then they leave their body and the pain is gone. But then when they return to their body after the near-death experience, the pain is still there.
Do they really want to stay there because they don't want the pain again? Is that true?
Well, people always say that they want to stay there. Mm-hmm. But they can think of various reasons, like to get back. For example, if they're told you have to go back, they're not given a choice. Or they might want to come back even knowing that there's going to be pain involved because they have young children left to raise or whatever is the common thing. Yeah, but it's entirely, this is what I hear all the time, is people say that pain is an artifact of existence in the body, and that when they're out of their physical bodies, they may have intrapsychic pain, like when you see the things you've done that hurts other people, you may feel bad about it, but that in terms of the physical pain, that's not a trait of this other framework of existence.
Right. Maybe it's like pregnancy, you forget it, the pain.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Dr. Moody. I'm an internist, and I've seen a few of my own patients have had these experiences. And it seems like, as I've looked at this field and found it really fascinating, it's almost like the different blind men that are holding on to different parts
yes,
of the elephant.
Yes, that's a good analogy.
And the near-death experiencers have a really good hold. But it also seems that modern physics is starting to try and catch on to this. As a Mormon, Joseph Smith said that spirit is matter. There's no such thing as immaterial matter. All spirit is matter. It's just more refined. And so he really stuck his neck out on that one. And so there is, according to him, going to be a physics of the spirit. Mm-hmm. And right now, it seems like the modern physicists are kind of finding multiple dimensions and all kinds of theories about this. I think it's Dr. Keiko, is the Japanese guy
science. Yeah. Uh-huh.
In one of his books, he said if there were 5 dimensions, there would be 24 primary colors. And the people that come back from these experiences
see
describe
colors
all the
that
colors.
Don't exist here.
And so
yeah.
My question is, I would really like you guys and the physicists to get together, and it seems like you're just on opposite ends. And so is that ever going to happen? And maybe as the physicists and string theory and all this progress in the next few years, maybe that will be part of the revolution that you're talking about.
Yes, I think you'd have to sort of approach it piecemeal. There's a physician in France who has, he's with IANS, and he's their research director. And I can't bring his name to mind, but like you, he had patients with near-death experiences, and that's how he got interested in it. And what most intrigued him was these accounts of people who say that while they're out of their body, they can see through walls or whatever. I've heard this very often. People say that when they're out of the body, that physical reality, as we say it, is no longer a factor. And for example, if you wonder what's in the other room, you just sort of see it. Intrigued by this and knowing nothing about mathematics, he undertook a study of the mathematics of higher dimensions to see if he could figure out what was going on. And he showed this at great lengths with all the diagrams and so on. And his work had been endorsed in France by mathematicians and so on who found it very plausible. And he said that from a fifth dimension framework of existence, you literally would see through walls. And I think it is a little convergence. And my own opinion is we don't want physics coming together too fast. I mean, let's draw this out a little bit for fun and excitement. But it has always seemed to me that ultimately there will be a kind of unification of knowledge. Going back to the original notion of the cosmos with Pythagoras, that really this is a unity, that would make sense that the material and the spiritual or the material and the mental or whatever would eventually have some connecting.
Brian Greene, who writes about string theory, and he just put out a book about 9 different versions of possible multiple universes. Mm-hmm. And it would seem like maybe one of those is true. And if he could use your information to inform him, and almost as a check, to see which of these would fit with these experiences, you could inform him and his research as well as he could inform you on yours.
I've always open to communications with colleagues and so on. Yes, ma'am.
The day after my dad passed, he let me know very definitely that he realized some things that he hadn't known before when he was alive, or when he was here. And that since then, I've had some pretty delightful little experiences with him, communications with him. And I wondered if you have ever studied that, people who have passed and they don't come back to live on Earth, but they come back to communicate with loved ones here.
Yes, I think that's a whole, a related dimension of this. And apparitions of the deceased are remarkably common, as has been shown in multiple medical studies, that a very common occurrence after someone dies is that the relatives will see them and communicate with them and so on. The percentages are really just almost unbelievable, but they keep recurring that it's about, in some studies, about 2/3 of people who lose a loved one will, within a certain period of time, have some experience which they feel very definitely to be contacting with that person. Yes.
I need to jump in here. We are out of our allotted time. I would like to thank you all for coming. I would like to thank Salt Lake Community College for having us, and thank you so much, Dr. Moody.
Thank you all so much. It's been delightful being with you, it really is.